the post-Thanksgiving edition of the Fly Guys podcast. Justin Goodhart alongside Cameron Klein as Cameron sits comfortably, seemingly, in his home, his homely abode.
Yes.
The ceiling is honestly throwing me off as I sit comfortably in the office of Penn State Harrisburg as we bring to you yet another edition of the Fly Guys podcast. Cameron, I'm just going to get this one out of the way. Firstly, to everyone listening, I hope you enjoyed your Thanksgiving. I hope the food was great. I hope that the time with your family was wonderful. Cameron, first and foremost, I just want to say to you, happy Thanksgiving. How was your holiday?
Thanks, man. Thank you. It was good. It was good. We went to my wife's parents' house. It was very nice. It was small, but it was cool. Just hanging out. I love her. I love both of her parents. Me and her dad were just sitting on the couch watching football. It was a great time. Her uncle was there, another great dude to get along with. Just a lot of great people. So yeah, it was good. I got my Black Friday shopping done too. Most of my Christmas shopping is done. I spent way too much money, but still, I got a lot of little trinkets for myself, including the new Call of Duty, which is pretty good. It's Call of Duty, it's fun. Got some new shoes, got some new stuff. I got a new suitcase. Because your boy is going to L.A. next
week. Yes, he is. Yes, he freaking is.
The Miami Dolphins take on the Chargers. That'll be a lot of fun. Very much looking forward to it. But so I'm all ready to go. How about you, dude? How was your Thanksgiving?
Well, I'll tell you what. It was really nice to get the chance to. I drove home Thursday morning to get to my parents' house. It was great to see my mom, see my dad, see my dog Nelson. Hung out with Grant. We watched football. We'll talk about football in just a second. The two games that we watched, we saw Buffalo escape Detroit with the narrowest of victories. I know, Cameron. I know. We'll talk about. Cameron was very unhappy about how Detroit played at the end of that game.
Yeah, I sent one text message to my father that day. One. Didn't say happy Thanksgiving. Didn't say happy holidays. Didn't say how's the food. I said the Lions fucking suck. That's what I said because I'm angry because they just are addicted to being losers.
I mean, listen. It's hard to necessarily disagree with you. When they, again, and you know what, before I even get into this, let me wrap up. Watch Dallas versus New York, knowing that I would prefer New York to win, but it's a win-win no matter what, because one team in the NFC East is basically declaring themselves out of the race, and predictably it was the Giants. And then I drove home, and then I woke up pretty early, around 5:30 in the morning, and got myself into work for Black Friday. It was busy. But it wasn't too terrible, and for those who are doing their holiday shopping in retail stores, just as a reminder, please be nice and courteous and patient with those who work in retail, as we're dealing with understaffed rosters, and also people are calling out all the time. I'm personally dealing with it, and most importantly, I don't care enough about your product if you're going to treat me like garbage. If anything, I'm going to go slower. I'm going to go slower intentionally out of spite. At that point, I'll be doing it out of spite for you. So whether you're at Target, whether you're at Walmart, whether you go to Dick's Sporting Goods, whether you go to any of the retailers, any of them, Macy's, don't care which one it is. If you treat them like garbage, I hope that you get treated like garbage by the staff in return. So that's
It's a weird thing that some people don't understand, that the guy wearing the Walmart vest is not the CEO of Walmart. So they're not making the rules. They're not making the money either. They're just there to kind of try to pay their bills.
So that was Thanksgiving. I had plenty of leftovers to eat. Thank you to my mother, Mrs. Goodhart, for just providing me with a great meal. And
is your mom a good cook? I imagine she is. She looks like she is.
She's Jewish, of course. She's a good. I better not say that in front of all Kanye West fans that probably listen to our.
I was like, well, that's not what I was saying, but all right.
No. She is a very good cook. She did a phenomenal job on the turkey. It was certainly not dry, and that is always one of the biggest concerns you have with the turkey.
Big time.
The stuffing was done really well. She made scalloped potatoes, which is a personal favorite of mine. I absolutely adore scalloped potatoes. That was in lieu of mashed potatoes. And then there was also a green bean casserole. There was a pumpkin pie that she had made. And then my brother Grant, I'm pretty sure he bought it, but he brought a pecan pie, which wasn't bad either. So, it was a great Thanksgiving, all the same. And it was nice. It was my first time really with my family in the last few months, especially after having moved out here. I miss them, and I hope that that they continue to thrive without me, because Lord knows I'm not thriving without them. But we're here to talk about football, as you know, Thanksgiving is not just about family, it's also about football. And then, you know, yes. I'm wearing like this kind of this fall shirt, Cameron, because I really embrace fall as a season. You know, it is I think one of my favorite times of the year. But what's really been my favorite time of the year right now has been Sundays. And the reason it's been Sundays is because my Philadelphia Eagles are flying high at 10-1.
Yeah.
And your favorite times of the week should be Sundays, because your Miami Dolphins are swimming and paddling their way to 8-3, seemingly a juggernaut, at least the clear-cut number two in the AFC.
As of the moment, yeah.
I would say so.
As of right now, I would say yes, because Kansas City's, they're reigning supreme. They're the best in the AFC.
I think they're the best team in football, even though they're not better than the Eagles by record. I still think they're the best team in the NFL.
Yeah, I think the competition level in the AFC is a little bit higher this season. There seems to be a lot of the NFC, other than the NFC East, which is very ironic given the last 5 years, the NFC is just a big mess of just like 500 or below 500 records.
Well,
the AFC, I think there's a little bit more, I don't know. I don't even know why. I don't even know why I think the AFC is playing that much better, but it just seems to be, I don't know, more.
I think you're a fan
football.
Of an AFC team, and you tend to kind of gravitate towards paying attention to what's happening more in the AFC.
Yeah,
but here's the great thing. We're going to go through the playoff picture right now. ESPN, if you guys don't already know this, ESPN does such a great thing. It's one of the last things that ESPN does that's actually good. They have what's called the NFL playoff machine. And if you don't know what that is, if you go into your computers and just type in ESPN NFL playoff machine, it is a playoff picture, and you get to predict the next weeks of games all the way up to the end of the season, and you get to kind of predict who you think is what the final playoff picture is going to look like. I think it's a lot of fun. I think that it takes up a lot of my nights where I'm just sitting on my computer and just doing like these mad scientist calculations to see like, oh my gosh, so if San Francisco loses this game and Tampa Bay wins this game, that means the week one or the wild card weekend has Dallas at San Francisco and then the Giants playing the Buccaneers in Tampa Bay or something like that. But And I promise you, what we're not doing on this episode, we're not simulating weeks 13 through 18. I can promise you of that. But what we are going to do is we're going to talk about what the playoff picture looks like right now, who we expect to be seeing, who we expect to fall out of favor, and then also we're going to do some talks, obviously, about the Dolphins and Eagles, because, again, those are our teams here on this podcast. The state-sponsored of the Miami Dolphins and the Philadelphia Eagles is, of course, the Fly Guys podcast. So,
yeah, naturally. Yeah.
As we'll jump right into the NFC first, and we'll start with the number 7 seed. It is the Washington Commanders. They have won 6 of their last 7. They are now 7-5. Only slightly in front of them at number 6 are the New York Giants, who have stumbled a little bit. They were at one point 7-2 and looking like a lock to at least make the playoffs. Now no longer looking like a necessary lock, but they're still in fine condition at 7-4. The 5th seed is firmly controlled by the Dallas Cowboys, especially after having swept the New York Giants. They are sitting at 8-3. The 4th seed is with the 5-6 Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It's only fitting that Tom Brady would be in the worst division in football, where he might have the chance to host a playoff game despite having a losing record. The 3 seed are the red-hot San Francisco 49ers, sitting at 7-4. The number 2 seed, as has been the case throughout most of the year, is controlled by the Minnesota Vikings at 9-2.
Yeah.
And then the number 1 seed are my high-flying Philadelphia Eagles, standing at 10-1. So as we jump right into this, Cameron, of those 7 teams that I've mentioned, who do you think falls out? And more importantly, if someone's falling out, who do you think is getting in?
Obviously, if I'm going to choose anybody who's going to fall out here, it would be Washington.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're, out of all of those teams, I think they're the least well-rounded.
Mm-hmm.
Except for maybe, I mean, like maybe Tampa, but I don't see anybody in the NFC South overtaking them. I don't, because I don't think any of those teams are any better than Tampa. That whole division is just a goddamn mess.
I mean, it really is bad. Now, you say Washington. I actually think Washington is going to make the playoffs, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Washington really has rallied behind Taylor Heinicke, who by no stretch is a great quarterback. He gets the job done. He's as much
he's,
of a...
He's a Ryan Fitzpatrick.
He's a Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
He's a Trent Dilfer, a worse version of Nick Foles. But Washington rallies around him. Now, who Washington wasn't rallying around was obviously Carson Wentz, but that's not necessarily the only reason why I think they're making the playoffs. I think they're going to make the playoffs because I expect the Giants to fall out so much so that Washington will be the de facto third team from the NFC East that actually gets in. I do think 3 teams from this division gets in, and I think it'll be Washington that overtakes New York.
Okay. That's fair. I do. Washington, the thing that I love about that team is they're obviously their rushing defense is the best part of their team. It's
absolutely
incredibly good without Chase Young too, which is equally impressive. I don't know, dude. The whole NFC is just a goddamn mess. I really, really like how the Giants are coached. I think they're coached extremely well. I loved mm-hmm. Brian Daboll going into this offseason. And I do think they kind of caught lightning with a bottle in a way that I don't think they have the most talent on their team, the New York Giants. And that's where you're kind of seeing Brian Daboll shine because of that reason. But Saquon being healthy is a big help. Like, for example, like I don't think Daniel Jones is that great of a quarterback. But if you have a coach who understands what he has at quarterback and what he can do with it, then you do. Washington is coached well, too, I guess. I don't think it's as good.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, dude. Who gives a shit? I don't think either one of them, like, they shouldn't leave the first round. Like, I don't even want to even talk about those two teams, to be completely honest with you. Like, the top five, even then, of the NFC, I don't really care for because I don't care about Tampa. It's that top four, the Eagles, the Vikings, the 49ers, the Cowboys. Those are the teams that I actually give a shit about. The Cowboys-Eagles game on Christmas is going to be outstanding. I'm so looking forward to that game. Honestly, the 49ers, they're the number two team in the NFC behind the Eagles. The Vikings, that's a pseudo 9-2 if I've ever seen one.
Have the Niners ridiculous. And Vikings played each other yet this year? Do they play each other? I actually don't know.
I don't know. Good question.
Take a look at their schedule real quick. For the record, so you mentioned the you mentioned the Eagles Cowboys game that's to come. Yes. I have kind of gone into that game expecting us to lose handily to Dallas. Only reason I think we're going to lose to Dallas is one.
That's nice. That's good.
We haven't won in Dallas since 2017. That's kind of been a house of horrors for the Eagles. In 2018, they had the very famous clear recovery game where they probably should have recovered an opening kickoff fumble, and the refs did not give it to them. They said that they did not clearly recover the game. Cowboys went on to win that game 29-23 in overtime. It was supposed to be a death blow to the Eagles' season, and you know, as history remembers, the Eagles ended up still making the playoffs. But I think the game that hurt the most was 2019, going into Sunday Night Football against the Cowboys. The Eagles, I mean, they got run out of the building almost immediately. They lost that game 37-17. It looked like that they were light years behind the Cowboys. If nothing else, for the division race, it looked like that, oh my gosh, Dallas is going to run away with this one as quick as it comes. But this year, I'll talk about the Eagles more in a bit. But like the point is that I expect Dallas to win that game. I don't expect it to change what the division finale will be. I still think the Eagles are going to win the division. But
I do too. But to go back to your Vikings 49ers question, they have not played and they will not play this season. Let me look at who the Vikings have played here. All right, let's go back. Let me look at the Vikings.
The Vikings play this week the Jets, which I guess is a sneaky potential loss for them because the Jets now all of a sudden have rejuvenated life in Mike White.
Let me tell you something here. So they let's go through their schedule, right? They played the Packers first. They beat them. We found out the Packers are not nearly as good as they once were. They played the Eagles second. The Eagles trashed them on, was that Monday night, I believe?
It was
right?
Monday Night Football, yep.
You know, primetime Kirk and all that bullshit. they beat the Lions 28-24, beat the Saints 28-25, beat the Bears 29-22, beat the Dolphins 24-16 without Tua. And that game ended on a Jalen Waddle fumble as Miami was driving, right? So Miami could have very easily taken that game. Then they beat the Arizona Cardinals 34-26, Washington 20-17, the Bills 33-30. They lost to the Cowboys 2 weeks ago, and they beat the Patriots 33-26. Other than
all of their games have been one possession games.
And okay, let's go through the teams, dude. Green Bay, not great. The Eagles, they lost. Great. Detroit, not great. New Orleans, not great. The Bears, not great. Miami, without Tua, not great. Arizona, not great. Washington, not great, which they beat by a field goal. The Bills, great.
Great. That's easily their best win.
Yes. And then the Cowboys. Every time they went against a tough defense, they struggle. The Patriots, the Cowboys, the Bills, which they won, but barely. Washington, by a field goal. The Saints, by a field goal. All these teams with good defenses, they struggle with. They can barely keep up with these teams, which have absolutely stagnant offenses but solid defenses. The Jets have a solid defense. There's a very, very real possibility that they lose this game this week. And I just think their 9-2 record is a farce. It's ludicrous. To put them up there with the Eagles and the 49ers? Are you out of your mind?
I mean, I certainly I'll say this. I thought the Cowboys were better than the Vikings. I don't think they were 40-3 better than the Vikings, but I thought that that loss spoke volumes about them. I was impressed, and I use this in air quotes, I was impressed that they survived Mac Jones and the New England Patriots, because I thought that would be the game that they have the big letdown, and then all of a sudden they're now 8-3 instead of 9-2, and here we go with the collapse. But what I will say is this. If they lose this game and the Niners end up beating the Dolphins, there's going to be a lot of nervous people up in Minnesota, because the last thing you want to do if you're Minnesota is fall to the 3. You do not want to have to go to San Francisco and play a playoff game right there, right now.
There's no chance they win. There's no chance they win.
I wouldn't give any team in the
NFC
a chance of winning in San Francisco right now.
No. Honestly, even in Minnesota, if San Francisco plays them, San Francisco is going to take that game. I see no other outcome.
So, between.
Like, people talk about the Eagles having an easy schedule.
That is an easy schedule.
We're looking at Minnesota here as if they're not walking through the park. Like, come on, man. This is ridiculous.
Philly at least has to play Philly has to play Tennessee this week. Then they got to play the Giants. That's back
to back.
They got
to play Dallas twice. Yeah, what Vikings had to play them once, and they look like they didn't deserve to be on a high school field. It's ridiculous.
Goodness gracious, the Eagles' end of the season is not as much of a cakewalk as people make it out to be. But
no.
But we'll talk about the Eagles in a sec. So to wrap. The only other team that I just want to quickly mention, because you mentioned Tampa Bay, they're sitting at 5-6, and you don't think there's another team that could sneak up and win the division. The only team I would give a
maybe
stone's
Atlanta.
Throw, I would give a chance to New Orleans. I think they're better than Atlanta.
I think they have a better defense. Yeah,
I think New Orleans at this point is such a shipwreck that I just don't see it happening. As a matter of fact, if New Orleans is playing Tampa Bay this week, if you're an Eagles fan, you are praying like hell that Tom Brady takes care of the Saints, because that only helps the Eagles' first-round draft pick ambitions get better, because that would mean New Orleans falls to 4-9. And at this point, Philadelphia, you're looking at a top-10 draft pick. That's pretty tasty. And there's a lot of great talent on the defensive end coming out. So, big Tampa Bay fan this week. Tom Brady, greatest quarterback of all time. I know you'll get it done. So
He should. He probably will. Dude, you can't put money on Andy Dalton. You can't do it. You just can't.
No.
So.
And then for Dallas, and I have kind of like a whole thing planned for Dallas a little bit later when we get closer and closer to the Eagles-Cowboys matchup. Incredible defense. They're seemingly learning that Tony Pollard at this point is the better running back between he and Zeke. Or at the very worst, Zeke is just better, I think, on limited carries. I think you can get more from him on 15 carries than you can for 25. Dak Prescott is still an efficient and good enough quarterback to beat porous teams, which – they've had an interesting test with the Indianapolis Colts this week. I think Dallas will win. However, that Colts team has a knack for sticking in games a little longer than they probably should. So that'll be an interesting one to look out for. And if Dallas loses that game and Philadelphia should win their game against Tennessee, that's pretty much it for the NFC East. So I'm obviously rooting very, very hard for Jeff Saturday, the most qualified candidate for a head coaching position I've ever seen, to win this week in Dallas.
You got to give him credit. He's at least given the ball to Jonathan Taylor, which is rocket science, according to some coaches.
More than what Frank Reich was willing to do, apparently.
Yeah, which didn't make any sense whatsoever. But it's not going to be a walk in the park for Dallas. And there's one person from Dallas that you did not mention that I'm a little bit ashamed of right now. To me, the most important part of Dallas, Micah Parsons.
Like I said, I have a whole thing planned for Dallas and the Defensive Player of the Year from Penn State, baby.
Yeah.
Micah Parsons is not only the most. Micah Parsons is not only just the most likable superstar in the NFL, in my opinion. And I understand that he plays for Dallas. And the minute you put on that star, you're supposed to be an unlikable player. Micah Parsons is a very likable guy. There was a lot of maturity questions coming about him out of college. He has certainly answered all of those questions with resounding. He is not the person that apparently he might have been or was depicted out to be. He's a fun guy to watch. And the only teams that he has struggled against this season were the Green Bay Packers and the Philadelphia Eagles. So he.
Before we move on, what two things do those two teams have?
They have incredible running games and very good quarterbacks.
Quick release quarterbacks. That ball is gone.
That is
gone. As soon as they snap the ball, which is the whole thing. Mike Parsons, he's so nasty because you can put him anywhere, and their pass rush is absolutely ridiculously good, which is my big reason why they beat the Vikings, because as soon as you fluster a guy like Kirk Cousins, there's no coming back. He doesn't have... He's shown time and time again he doesn't have the resolve to be able to come back once he gets flustered. But anyway, moving on.
So now let's move on to the AFC. Let's take a look at the AFC playoff picture. And again, I'm just going to go from 7-1. Starting first with the 7 seed, this is definitely the team I wouldn't have thought I'd be saying about this in going into week 13. The 7-4 New York Jets seemingly saved their season when they made the right decision to bench Zach Wilson. And go figure, they end up putting on an offensive show in the rain in Chicago for a 7-4 record now. Number 6 are the Cincinnati Bengals, who started off the season slow at 0-2, but they have rebounded to win 7 of their next 9. The 5th-seeded Buffalo Bills, who are tied for first place in the AFC East, but do not hold the tiebreaker over those Miami Dolphins due to a previous matchup with the Dolphins. The 4th seed belongs to the Baltimore Ravens, who would probably be the number 2 seed or maybe even the number 1 seed if they could stop blowing leads and losing in embarrassing fashions. The 3rd seeded Tennessee Titans are exactly where I felt about them last year when they were the number 1 seed. Why is this team 7-4 and in the 3 seed right now? Doesn't make much sense to me. And then the 2-seeded Miami Dolphins, who I am contending that if Geno Smith does not win Comeback Player of the Year, it should go to Tua Tagovailoa. And then number 1, the Kansas City Chiefs. You know them. You love them. Big Red Andy Reid once again killing the AFC with Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, who is having a year that might go down as one of the greatest statistical seasons in tight ends history.
Yeah. Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah. Cameron, who is not going to make the playoffs from this picture?
The Jets.
I knew he was. We can't have fun in this NFL anymore. The Jets can't make the playoffs.
Like Rob Saleh, I love as a head coach. As soon as New York hired him, I audibly out loud just said shit, because I knew like they made a good decision. And you hate when your rival makes a good decision.
Yeah.
Like the Dallas Cowboys did when they drafted Micah Parsons. You're like, son of a bitch, because you know that he's going to kill for them. And that's how I felt about Rob Saleh. But I could see the Chargers overtaking them. But like once you go kind of below the Chargers in New England, I don't really see any of those other teams making it. So I really think it's just kind of New England and the Chargers. I also don't think New England is going to overtake them, to be honest with you. So I think if any team's going to overtake the Jets, it would be the Chargers. And moving on from there, I mean, there's
pretty much no one.
Yeah, it might be jumbled. Of the playoff picture might be jumbled a little bit, but I don't think there's going to be a lot of changes. I could see Cincinnati taking the AFC North away from Baltimore, but I still think Baltimore would be a wild card team.
Baltimore, I agree with you. They're not falling out of the playoffs. Like look at the entire AFC. The only team that is below New England and Los Angeles that could make a viable, and I mean the odds of this are so unbelievably astronomical, it's almost not even worth mentioning. If, for whatever reason, Deshaun Watson comes back and lights it up for the Cleveland Browns, that is the only team I could foresee making a run at it. Las Vegas, they've put it together a nice little string of wins, especially in overtime. I still don't think they're good enough. Denver's a freaking mess, and they might have to move on from Russell Wilson as soon as next year. Houston, obviously not. Jacksonville, definitely not. Indianapolis, if they don't win this week, it's obviously over for them. But at this point in time, I would say I think the Patriots are better than the Chargers because the Chargers have a god-awful defense and god-awful coaching staff. The Patriots still have Belichick, and might I say, Mac Jones did bounce back last week and actually performed very well against a stout Minnesota Vikings defense. So if New York's not going to make it, it'll be the Patriots in their stead at the 7 seed.
Yeah, it could be. Everything I said earlier about the Giants and how Brian Daboll, how much I love that, how that team is coached. I feel the exact opposite with the Chargers. So I am kind of glad you brought that up. I think they are coached terribly. And it makes me feel for Justin Herbert because that guy is one of the most talented quarterbacks to come into this league in the last 5 years. And for him to just be wasted by terrible decision-making over and over and over again.
Being turned into Charlie Checkdown.
Yeah, it's feel
disgusting.
For the kid. I really do. And another guy I feel for, Lamar Jackson. Can we help the guy?
See,
can
like,
we get him something? A weapon? A running back? Anything?
John Harbaugh is one of my favorite coaches in football. I absolutely love John Harbaugh. But
I don't.
here's the thing about, I mean, well, I can understand that. Here's the thing. Like, Greg Roman is a terrible offensive coordinator who has lived past his shelf life. Like, he is just, he cannot be the offensive coordinator. It reminds me so much of when the Eagles, under Andy Reid, refused to move on from Marty Morningwig when it was obviously time to move on from him, when the game had obviously passed him by, when the offensive schemes were not working the way that they should have. Now, I know it's a little bit different because Reid called the plays in Philadelphia, not necessarily Morningwig, but in my opinion, with the Baltimore Ravens, their biggest problem is the fact that they have no idea how to close games out. This is now the fourth loss that they've had where they should have not lost the game. And to lose, listen, when you blow that lead to the Miami Dolphins, you're like, wow, that was kind of weird. I probably shouldn't do that again. Then you do it again a few weeks later. Okay, that's annoying. That needs to be stopped. I could forgive those losses because ultimately you lost to teams that weren't that horrible. You lost to the Jaguars. You lost to Doug Peterson, and I love Doug Peterson, but I don't know how good of a coach Doug Peterson is, and I don't know how long this is going to last for him and for Trevor Lawrence down in Jacksonville. So that's a bad loss, no matter how you slice it up. You cannot, if you're going to give up a touchdown, you damn well cannot give up a two-point conversion to Trevor Lawrence, who up to that point had shown that he has no ability to win a game down the stretch.
Yeah, that was the biggest win of his career so far.
That's a I'm saved for the time moment. Like, I'm saved for a little bit of time.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, no, 100%.
But the
Tennessee Titans as well, I have liked them. I like Mike Vrabel. I think they're a great team.
You and I are on different ends. I like Mike Vrabel, but I do not like that team.
I shouldn't say great. I shouldn't say great, but I do like them. I do think they're a fine team. I think Tannehill, you know, the ship has sailed on him at this point. Derrick Henry's still Derrick Henry, but they're coached extremely well, and that's why I like them. I think they have a solid receiving core as well, and some young guys.
They've got a really
highlighted because of Derrick Henry.
They've got a really, really tough game this week in Philadelphia. I
don't see them winning at all. No,
I mean, I could see them winning if Derrick Henry runs for 300 yards on the Eagles' defense, but we've just been informed that Jordan Davis is on his way back. So if Davis, Linval Joseph, and the Ndamukong Suh are rotating in there, not convinced that Derrick Henry is going to have the kind of success that you would hope that he has.
And even if Derrick Henry does have a big game, I still don't see that defense being able to stop the Eagles. I am a little upset. It would be cool for this game to be in Tennessee because A.J. Brown, I think anything he does on Sunday – if it was in Tennessee, double the numbers. If he gets 110 yards this week, if it was in Tennessee, he'd get 210, three touchdowns. Like, he's that type of dude where he's extremely, I mean, we've seen how good he is all season. We've seen how good he is the past 5 years, 4 years. But, like, he has that pettiness about him where you can tell he holds on to grudges. You can tell he holds on to shit.
Yeah.
And he wants the stunt on that team. He is going to thrive off
back
of the
to back
hate messages
weeks of-
that he gets from Tennessee Titan fans.
Back-to-back so weeks of really bad fumbles. He did catch a touchdown against the Packers. I think that guy might be telling Hurts this week, like, listen, give me the ball.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I would expect him to be doing that. But I mean,
I'm going to look forward to that.
So that's Tennessee. So realistically, only one team that we really foresee falling out, it would be the Jets. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, who makes it in, Los Angeles or the Chargers or the Patriots. That remains to be seen. Now let's talk about our teams. Let's talk about what the Philadelphia Eagles and the Miami Dolphins are at this point. Miami is coming off of a 30-15 win over the Houston Texans, and the 15 is merely cosmetic. They were winning that game 30-0. They benched Tua pretty early in the second half.
He went down kind of hard. He was fine, but it was one of those things where they checked him out for like half a second, and they just thought, you know what, we're up 30. I didn't like how early they decided to keep him out. I would have liked him to at least finish out the third quarter. But, you know, they won the game, so it's
what. Yeah, I mean, like, anyone that sees, like, oh, did Houston start to make a comeback? No, it was garbage time numbers that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Philadelphia fended off the Green Bay Packers 40-33 on Sunday Night Football.
Dude, Aaron Rodgers looked like Aaron Rodgers all of a sudden.
About a quarter and a half, and he looked very good. Now, I texted you,
texted
like, hey,
me,
listen.
And you were like, yeah, yeah.
I'm glad that this could be the comeback for Aaron Rodgers. I'm really glad that they came against us. Now, it was short-lived, but last week or the week before, it was the Eagles defense that had to save the Eagles from certain doom as they held the Indianapolis Colts to 16 points. Eagles get a late drive from Jalen Hurts, leads the game-winning touchdown. You know the rest. They win the game. This week, it was the Eagles offense that said, all right, we'll bail out the defense this week, and they score 40 points. A lot of people have been saying, well, the Eagles are starting to look – they're starting to show their cracks. They're starting to look really, really fraudulent. And I don't know if I'd say fraudulent. I certainly don't think they're playing their best football right now. But what I do think, that win against the Packers made me feel a lot better. Because, and there's a reason why, when the Eagles game was tied up at 20, when the Packers scored the second and 20 touchdown pass to Aaron Jones, I'm like, all right, I'm not surprised that that happened because Aaron Rodgers is still good enough to take advantage of an Eagles defense that loves to be Swiss cheese soft.
Yeah.
Here's what impressed me. The Eagles go down the field, score before halftime to make it 27-20. Beautiful throw by Jalen Hurts, a little short of the pylon, makes Quez Watkins make the adjustment, makes the catch, backs in for a touchdown.
That's fine.
The thing that mattered to me the most, how was the defense going to respond when the Packers got the ball to start the second half? They stopped them, and then the Eagles went right down the field, touchdown to A.J. Brown to make it 34-20. That was the first time all game where I was like, we're fine. This team is going to be just fine. Yes,
yeah.
Christian Watson got a 75-yard touchdown. I personally love that play happened because it was Jonathan Gannon being like, we're not going to allow the big play. We're going to play back. And then they proceed to give up the big play. And that, yeah. The only thing that would have made it better is if Christian Watson ran past the Eagles sideline and flipped off Jonathan Gannon as he ran back to his sideline. That's the only thing that would have made it better. But yeah. That win for the Eagles was really impressive. Jalen Hurts doesn't have all the passing numbers in the world like a Josh Allen might, but that was 157 yards rushing, the most by any Eagles quarterback. And if you know the history of Eagles quarterbacks, you should know that's a very impressive thing to say. Vic, McNabb, Cunningham, the three best running quarterbacks arguably in NFL history until Lamar Jackson arrived. So that is a great testament to Jalen Hurts. Miles Sanders is having a career year. And look what happens when they give him the ball, Cameron.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Look what happens when they give him the ball.
Been saying it for the last 3 years, yeah.
He's such a good running back, it's not even funny.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, the hate that he's gotten.
Philadelphia stands at 10-1. I do feel that they'll win this week against Tennessee. And I think that they're going to win the following week against the Giants. I think their next loss comes to the Cowboys. I think they finish this season with 3 losses. I think they lose to the Cowboys on Christmas Eve, and I think they lose to the Giants at home because the backups will be in the game, and they're not going to care about that game. So
I can see that.
Philadelphia, I have 14-3. Their upside is obviously a Super Bowl victory because despite their flaws, they're still a top 3 team in the NFL. And yes, despite their flaws, they have a tremendous plethora of talent that is in no way, shape, and form. This is me not grandstanding or saying this with too much victim of the moment complex. Their talent stands with any team that exists right now in the NFL. They are by far and away the most talented team top to bottom. Their coaching has been the biggest issue. And so we'll see if that changes. I personally think that Philadelphia is as good as 10-1 indicates. Bill Parcells once said it best, you are what your record says you are. And 10-1 is a really, really good way of putting it for Philadelphia. I'm not nervous about this team. I think that Jalen Hurts continues to pour it on. And it would be really nice if the defense, namely the secondary, could calm some people down. Don't let Ryan Tannehill go off on you. Don't let Treylon Burks go off on you. Shut that down. Make it be that if you're going to lose the game, it's because Derrick Henry took the game over, which I don't think will happen anyway because I think Philadelphia's offense with A.J. Brown, you could use that guy, Tennessee, will be enough to stave off any potential threats from Tennessee.
Yeah. Yes to all that. I want to take a moment, actually, now that you brought up the defensive scheme going into this game for the Eagles. I want to take this moment right now to talk to Jonathan Gannon directly. So if everyone listening to this could please turn down the podcast so that I could talk directly to Jonathan. This is a private conversation between me and Jonathan Gannon. John, pressure Tannehill. As a Dolphins fan, I've seen what happens when he gets flustered. Just put any one guy in his face. You don't need to send 6 guys. Send 4 of your best, or 5. Throw a 5th guy in there, just every once in a while, just to get in his face. Yeah, it's fine. It's totally fine. You will win the game. Okay, everybody, volume's up. You're good. Private conversation's over. John, I hope you heard that.
So,
but yeah.
Dude, yeah, I mean, like, that's actually a really good point.
That's all you have to do with this team. If you stack the box to where Henry can't do anything, right? If you stop him in the first quarter from getting more than 30 yards, which is a big ask because he's a very good running back. But if you do that and they start to try to abandon the run, if your offense can score and your defense can stop Derrick Henry for the first quarter, they're going to start to have to throw the ball. They're forcing Ryan Tannehill, who I love, RT17, till I die. He's a great guy. I'm a big fan of him. But I've seen him. I've lived with him. If you get any amount of pressure in his face, he's going to fold quicker than Kirk Cousins will. So it's fine. But, dude, yeah, the 10-1 record for the Eagles, I think a lot of people have been giving them shit for their schedule, which has been a little bit on the easy side, I'll admit. But in those 10 wins, they've beaten teams how a 10-1 team would handle those teams. Does that make sense? Like, if that 10-1 record came against better opponents, that team that faced those better opponents would beat those teams that the Eagles have faced this year as the Eagles did. They stomped most of these teams. And the Indianapolis Colts game, I think, is a little bit of an outlier because the Eagles had their first loss. They're going into this game thinking, they had to win. The pressure was on after losing their first game. The pressure was on, but they were able to be resilient and get the victory at the end because Jalen Hurts is a beast. And that there taught them a lesson of not giving up and moving forward. And I think, like you mentioned with this last game against Green Bay on Sunday night, when the Eagles were playing Washington and they went into the half, they weren't leading the game. And that was the first time all season that had happened, where they were going into the half and coming out of it without a lead. And it was my first thought when that was happening was, let's see how they respond to this. And they tried, but ultimately failed to get that victory. We saw it kind of again, where the Packers were right there. Aaron Rodgers was back. He looked like he was back. He looked like he was back into his form. He was looking good. But this time, the Eagles figured it out. They kept their resilience. The span of how they kind of seem to have learned that lesson, the span of 3 weeks, is very, very impressive. It's a testament to the leadership on that team and the coaching on the team, not defensively, but the overall coaching on the team. So I think that loss was a really big blessing in disguise for the Eagles because I think they learned a lot from it, and I think they are a much better team because of it. And I think they're going to continue to be a great team moving forward.
Well, you say, like, you know, we brought up, like, the Vikings schedule and everything, you know, the Eagles being 10-1. 3-point win over the Lions, 17-point win over the Vikings, 16-point win over the Commanders, 8-point win over the Jaguars, in which they outscored the Jaguars 29-7 after falling behind 14-0. 3-point win in Arizona, which is one of the harder places to win if you're an Eagles fan. You should know that winning in Arizona is a very hard thing to do. 9-point win over the Cowboys, 22-point win over the Steelers, 12-point win over the Texans, 1-point win over the Colts, and then a 7-point win over the Packers. What I'll say about the Colts game, they played down to competition. They've been playing down to competition for the last few weeks, like with the Texans, the Colts, and I won't say the Packers because the Packers still have a lot of talent on that team. I can excuse when a couple of times you play down to competition. What I don't want to see, though, is when you fall into the same traps. And I'm glad it was interesting you mentioned that. They went into the half against the Packers up by 7, but that was kind of a lucky thing that they were going up by 7. They got bailed out by Hurts at the end. They took control very quickly of that second half, and the rest of the half I was not nervous at all as to who was going to win the game. So that's kind of how I wanted to end it with the Eagles before we turn things over to the Miami Dolphins. The Miami Dolphins sitting at 8-3. They are the number 2 seed in the AFC. And if
they're
you
the number
to-
1 seed.
Huh?
Then they're the number 1 seed.
They're the number 1 seed?
Oh, the AFC East. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Well, they will be the number 1 seed, so it doesn't matter. Anyway, moving on.
But if you want to talk about, you know, how they've played in their games, 13-point win over the Patriots, 4-point win over the Ravens in that amazing comeback, 2-point win in that Bills game, which was great. Happy wedding day for Cameron. 12-point loss to the Bengals after Tua died. 23-point loss to the Jets after Tua was already pronounced dead.
Which 17 of those points were in the fourth quarter, but yeah, go on.
8-point loss to the Vikings with Tua being buried somewhere in South Beach. And then Tua miraculously was able to resurrect himself and come back, and they beat the Steelers in an ugly fashion, but they beat them. 6-point win. Mm-hmm. It's okay. Yeah. 4-point win over the Lions. A stingy Lions team that has played teams tough this year, but just doesn't know how to win. 3-point win over the Bears, which was one of the weirdest. I mean, that was just like Justin Fields is finally coming out party. 22. Then they get back on track, though. 22-point win over the Cleveland Browns. 15-point win over the Houston Texans. Cameron, you're going into this week against the San Francisco 49ers. How do you feel?
This is the biggest game of the season for Miami so far. It's not even close. It's not even close. This is the first time you're playing against a really, really, really the best defense in the league. You're playing against the best defense in the league. So Miami has had this powerhouse of an offense, absolute powerhouse of an offense, arguably the best offense in the league, except for, you know, maybe the Eagles and the Chiefs, the other two teams I would say are the top three teams in the NFL. So you going against this great defense, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be really, really interesting. I'm nervous. I'm not going to hide the fact that I'm nervous because this is a great team. But there is a lot of variables here, a lot of X factors in terms of the mental aspect of this game. This is Mike McDaniel's team that he left. This is where he was the offensive coordinator. This is where he gained a lot of his knowledge to become the head coach that he is with Miami. Kyle Shanahan, he pretty much grew up with the guy practically ever since he was like 17, being a part of being a ball boy with the Denver Broncos, for God's sakes, with Shanahan's father. They're very, very connected. McDaniel is known as being, a lot of guys have described him as like a mad scientist when it comes to football. And he's very, very in touch with his players. And he's extremely competitive as well, as any head coach would be. He wants to beat this team really, really badly. And I have a feeling the mad scientist hat is going to be put on for this game. There is going to be things that we as Dolphin fans have not seen all season, because I think he's going to pull out every bag of tricks he absolutely has to be able to get this win, because he really, really wants it. As does Raheem Mostert, a former 49er. As does Jeff Wilson Jr., a former 49er as of this season, who his opportunity was taken away when they traded for Christian McCaffrey, who now that Elijah Mitchell is hurt, and it turns out McCaffrey's not practicing either because he's having another knee issue. They might have made a mistake in getting rid of Jeff Wilson in that fashion, but we'll find out. I think this game is huge. I don't know how they win. I really don't, because the good thing is that Tua has one of the quickest releases in the NFL. You're going to have to get rid of that ball extremely quickly against this defensive line because it's an insane defensive line. That's what he's going to have to do. I imagine a lot of check down passes going on to the outside, a lot of panic moves. They're going to be in his face. The biggest problem Miami has is Teron Armstead being out.
Yeah,
they're saying there's a possibility he could play. I don't know if he will. I don't think that he will. But yeah, this is where the depth really comes into question for Miami. And it's the one thing I said during the offseason. It's one thing I said earlier on this season. It's what I'm saying now. The one thing that really worries me about Miami is their depth. If guys start to get hurt, I don't know if they're going to be able to sustain the success that they have. And guys are starting to get hurt. You see Teron Armstead. We have not seen Byron Jones all season. We don't know if we will. They lost, not Emmanuel Ogba, Landon Roberts, an edge rusher who's been playing extremely well all season. So yeah, I'm not as confident as I would be if the team was fully healthy, but even then I wouldn't be 100% confident. It's going to be a very good game. I do think that the Dolphins can absolutely do it because of Mike McDaniel's mad scientist bullshit, and I believe in Tua. I have pretty much since he's been on the team, and the biggest thing is he's shown time and time again in the big games, he shows up. He has shown up. He's done it his rookie season when he played against the Arizona Cardinals. He's the one who led that team down the field to get a touchdown to win that game with Mac Hollins as his receiver, of all people, who's having a great year by the way.
Shout out to the Oakland Raiders. Or, I'm sorry, Las Vegas Raiders.
They should be in Oakland, though, but it's fine. But, yeah, he showed it this year with Baltimore. He showed it with the Bills. He showed it with Chicago, which isn't a great team, but they were knocking on the door, and Tua has shown up time and time and time again. So with those X factors in mind, I do think Miami pulls it out, but it's going to be a very, very stressful day for me. I'm not looking forward to that, but I'll be watching it no matter what. So it is what it is. I do think they can pull it out. I'm hoping that they do.
Well, I don't.
But we'll find out.
I don't have much to add to this conversation. You can pretty much hit on all my fucking talking points. But what I was going to say is the fact that Miami all season long, we've been waiting. And when I say we, I mean the people that just hate the Dolphins and hate Tua Tagovailoa. That we've been waiting for this coming apart game. And instead of seeing it with Tua, we're more or less seeing it with the Seattle Seahawks and how Geno Smith seems to be, you know, all of a sudden they're regressing a little bit. His numbers are still good, but that's not the point. Miami has been without Byron Jones all season. Cameron mentions his concern with depth. They've been without Byron Jones, but the person who has had to step up and the way that the secondaries had to step up, they've done so. They've done so quite admirably, by the way.
Yeah, like Xavier Howard is Xavier Howard, so he's going to play great no matter what. Yeah, the big guy who stepped up really good well is Kader Kouahou, who a lot of if you don't watch the Dolphins, you don't know who that is. But he's just I want to say his second year or a rookie. He's a rookie, I believe. He's playing extremely well, Javon Holland has not regressed at all from his rookie season last year.
Yes.
He's playing extremely well as well.
Yes,
I love him. He wears 8, which is the best number. It's my favorite number, so I love that about him too. But yeah, so no, they have stepped up. They have stepped up. But it's one of those things where you can't keep asking guys to step up consistently over and over again on every aspect of the game. Because a big thing that helped that secondary early this season is the defensive line, which is starting to get hurt a little bit. However, you know, they did make some preemptive trades to try to avoid that with Bradley Chubb added to the team. So we'll see. We'll see. But it's... Yeah,
If they're going to march into San Francisco and win, I think Jeff Wilson has to have a very big game in terms of helping the Dolphins control the clock. The way that you beat this Niners team, do not let Jimmy Garoppolo get chance after chance after chance to lead the ball down the field. Because Jimmy Garoppolo, despite what all stupid national media people will tell you, is one of the more efficient quarterbacks in recent NFL history. He's extremely good at what he does. He's probably... He's the best game manager that New England has ever developed. So I really think that it's not a crazy thing to say that Jimmy Garoppolo, with enough chances, beats the Miami Dolphins and that team.
Not, you know, not at all.
Like 27-17, I could see that score being in favor of San Francisco. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think that, one, San Francisco's secondary is good, not better than what the receiving talent that the Miami Dolphins are going to be throwing at you. There aren't many secondaries I feel particularly comfortable with in having to deal with that secondary. The only way San Francisco wins this game is if they sack the living crap out of Tua Tagovailoa when he's going back to pass. I think it's possible with the offensive line injuries that you're seeing. It's possible. But ultimately, I think that that Miami running game, and I think that the quick passing game that Tua has, and the fact that he can get the ball to guys like Jalen Waddle and to Tyreek Hill, is going to be enough to keep that team off balance. I think that Miami, if they control the clock, if they control the time possession, which they've done such a great job of all season, where they've done a very, very good job of being able to control the clock at key times, especially in the second half, and you've seen it in their close wins that they had over Chicago, over Detroit, over over Pittsburgh. They controlled the ball when they needed to. That is what makes Miami a great team. That's what's going to eventually help them win this game.
Yeah, and I think the thing that I'll end it with is obviously Mike McDaniel came from San Francisco. Mm-hmm. He was the offensive coordinator there, or one of the offensive coordinators there. Nick Bosa, edge rusher from the 49ers, absolutely outstanding player, Pro Bowl, All-Pro, defensive end, insanely talented, is on record saying that he's never been more frustrated than when playing against Mike McDaniel's offenses. His offensive game planning, his offensive schemes. Well, you're going to have to do it all day on Sunday, and it's not practice this time, guy. This is the real thing. So, we'll see. We'll see. I do expect a big game out of Tyreek Hill, though, too. He's been kind of silent the last 2 weeks, which is funny because he's had like 85 yards and 75 yards, which is considered silent for Tyreek Hill because he's not busting out 160. But I do expect a big bounce back game from him. So, we'll see. What is happening? You're making an interesting face, Justin.
So, Tampa Bay police are trying to make multiple attempts to take Antonio Brown into custody.
Huh.
It's not an ongoing standoff. That's what that was initially reported on Twitter. Police say he's not communicating. Well, that's something else. I'm interested to see how that goes. Odell Beckham Jr. getting being knocked unconscious on a flight and then getting, you know, yelling at the flight attendants is one thing. Antonio Brown being insane is not surprising. But
it's obviously, I was just going to say, we can't really be necessarily surprised by that.
No, not at all. But to put a bow on this episode of the Fly Guys podcast, obviously Cameron and I are very, very excited about the prospects of our teams and how they're doing. But ultimately, the great unknown lingers, the Eagles and Dolphins, a potential Super Bowl matchup, which would finally make Ace Ventura a historically accurate movie. Yeah. That's the most important thing. We should have Jim Carrey should do the coin toss at that Super Bowl if it's Eagles-Dolphins.
I would not be surprised if the NFL pulled that off. I would not be surprised at all.
I think Jim would do it. I mean, he's kind of cuckoo nowadays, but I mean, you know, he's...
He'd do it.
I think he'd do it.
He's still a showman, yeah.
So, for the Fly Guys podcast, my name is Justin Goodhart. This has been Cameron Klein. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Fly Guys Podcast, at Goodhart Justin, at Cameron Klein 15. As always, be happy, be healthy. Obviously, go Flyers, go Eagles, go Dolphins. You know, fins up, baby. Fly, you know, go Birds. Cameron, one thing I also wanted to say was I got your thank you card. Thank you very much. That it was very nice to get a chance to read that from you and Olivia. And hopefully, you know, I can see you guys soon. Maybe if I ever get my butt home from Harrisburg.
Dude. Of course, dude. Anytime.
All right, everyone. We'll see you next week on another edition of the Fly Guys Football Podcast.